Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, author of The Mystery of Life Energy, Dr. Eric Leskowitz.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Claude Hall. I am Mark Leisure, and now our host, the MC, the Master of Change, Filippo Voltaggio.
This is our episode 788, titled The Mystery of Life Energy. Well, that's the title also of our guest's book, The Mystery of Life Energy, Biofield Healing Phantom Limbs, Group Energetics, and Gaia Consciousness. And that is by Dr. Eric Leskowitz, who we will be speaking with here in just a moment. I'm bringing it up in this way because I have been listening to the audio version of this book, and I have been listening while my teenage niece has been around. And at one point I paused the audio and I wasn't even sure or didn't really pay attention whether she was paying attention or not. And I paused and she said, "That was really interesting." And then had a question. And we talked about things around the subject matter and then had another question and then talked more about things. And I said, maybe we'll learn more about that in the more of the book. Should I turn it on? Yes, please. And then when I was running out of time, I paused it and I said, we'd have to continue another time. Do you want me to do it when you're around? Yes, please. I thought, wow, how wonderful to be that young and to be exposed to and have an understanding about these kinds of things, which are, I believe, really fundamental to, no pun intended, the mysteries of life, or for that matter, life energy. And I thought, well, wait a minute. When I was young, I was interested in some of these subject matters. And I was ridiculed by many or told that it was taboo or just understood that it wasn't a conversation that I should be having. But then again, I think of our own guest and who probably had much of the same experience. So I'll be interested in learning how he not only bridged the gap, but wrote the book. And so I can't wait to dig into that conversation with him.
That conversation is a conversation all of us need a little bit earlier in life. I wish I had learned a lot of these things that we're having the great fortune of speaking of now in younger years.
Yes, and we're still learning, and there's probably so much more to learn, not probably, for sure. So we have this great pleasure of having on this episode The Mystery of Life, a consultant psychiatrist, founder of Integrative Medicine Task Force at a hospital, no less, and we'll get into that in a moment, and author of The Mystery of Life Energy, Dr. Eric Leskowitz. Welcome, Rick, to the Life Changes Show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me here.
It's a pleasure, and I can't wait to dig in. Were you ever ridiculed along this subject matter?
Well, I sort of played it close to the chest for many years, not sort of showing my hand fully, but it was a gradual evolution for me, and so I didn't like jump on the stage and command attention, but I have to say, in medical school, when I was really starting to ask some of these questions, I got a lot of funny looks because I had taken a couple of years off before starting medical school and sort of got off the treadmill that most of my classmates had continued on. So I had a little bit of perspective. I had traveled overseas and things, saw how different cultures did things. So the questions I was asking were sort of coming from left field and didn't quite go over all that well. Actually, the faculty had some problems too. I had just learned how to meditate before starting school. This was in 1975. And so I was very excited about the potential for it. So I was asking, can it help this condition? Can it help that condition? And back then there was no research on it, so there was no good answer. So I got some flack for that. And then over the years, with the energy part coming in, there was more resistance to it, I have to say. But I just want to add, I'm really encouraged by your niece's reaction, because the goal of what I'm putting out here is not to have it be super technical and super specialized, but that a general audience, or what they call the intelligent layman, layperson, can relate to. So this is, you already made my day by telling me that.
Well, actually both, because she is, on the one hand, a layperson, and on the other hand, she's an athlete. And so listening to a particular part that we may get into, where you had athletic experiences that were in the field, so to speak. So before we get into all of that, so one of the interesting parts to me and to all of us at the Life Changes Show with having this conversation with you specifically is that you are a doctor with a psychiatrist degree, and that you worked in a hospital, and you were bringing this information forward within the hospital. So there were a couple particular circumstances which made it kind of okay, right? Because there was no other way, right?
Well, I was in an unusual, unique situation. I was working in a pain management program, where we took people who were suffering from chronic pain, which means that pain had persisted for at least 6 months, that didn't respond to the traditional forms of medicine, the usual injections and surgeries and medications. So people were a little bit more willing to try something different, and a little bit desperate too. It was in a rehabilitation hospital, so I worked with a lot of physical therapists and occupational therapists on the physical angle, but we also paid a lot of attention to the psychological and emotional aspects of it. So I had a good chance to try out some of these. Initially, it was just the mind-body approaches like meditation or biofeedback. But as my interest and skill level and energy approaches increased, we began to incorporate those too. And it turned out several of my colleagues who also had the professional qualifications of OT and PT and RN, et cetera, had also learned some of these energy modalities on the side, but because of their credentials and because we were in a setting that anything goes, we could try it. I mean, not anything goes, but the patients were willing to try anything. And the rest of the staff said, well, you know, what's the worst that could happen? And as these modalities began to have more and more of an impact, there became more and more openness to try it. And, you know, it's not the main treatment now, but it's certainly an important component to it. And, you know, we weren't the first people to do it. We're not the only people to do it. This is at Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital in Boston. But it was important too, because our hospital was affiliated with Harvard Medical School, and their residents went through our program as part of their training. So a lot of junior doctors were getting exposed to these new approaches, and that I think has a big impact in terms of the next generation and the next generation. And I think that's how change comes about, when the newer people get exposed to these ideas and don't have to deal with decades and decades of bad information and stereotyping, and they can take it in with fresh minds.
So you in the book talk about understanding energy and how to feel energy, and then you also talk about energy in interesting ways. There's the personal energy, which we'll talk about in a moment, and then group energy, or really large group energy, like large groups of people and countries even, and the world, and then the actual energy of the planet. So we'll try and touch on all of that without getting into like how we feel it, because you do a great job in the book taking people through exercises and all. Where would you briefly say this energy comes from, the personal energy, let's say?
Well, that's a really good question. I think everybody is familiar with the experience of sort of having a personal space. You can feel it when somebody comes into your space, and that's the sense that there's an aura around you. And one way of thinking about it is that there are a lot of electrical and magnetic processes happening in our body and our nervous system and the brain and heartbeat and all, and it generates a magnetic field. And so we're like bar magnets, and we have a field that extends out to a certain degree, in all directions. But I think it's more complicated than that. It's not just the electromagnetic stuff that, we learn about in high school physics, for example, because some of the characteristics are different. It doesn't fade off with distance the same way that magnetism does. And there are certain pathways that it follows that the map was drawn thousands of years ago in the East with acupuncture meridians and points. And the so-called energy centers or chakras from the yoga model, those are unusual structures, and there's not an actual physical component to it. It's almost as if the energy stuff comes first, is sort of the subtle aspect of our being, and then it condenses down into the physical body as the more dense form of us. So I don't think we have a full answer to it yet. We're learning how to manipulate it and to work with it. But I think it comes from a sort of more subtle aspect of who we are. The main point I would say is that human beings are multidimensional. We're not just the physical body, that there's other levels or other parts to us as well.
I love how you got into the phantom limb and pain, and some people talk about that, but not a lot of people know about it. And that almost, well, interestingly enough, you said like the energy comes first. So like what does come first, the energy or the limb?
Well, this is the key question. Just a quick background. In our pain program, we saw all sorts of pains, and one that was particularly intriguing because it was so unresponsive to normal treatment is the pain that results after amputation. Not all the time. It's very common for an amputee to feel as though the leg is still there. And it's more unusual to have pain, but when the pain is there, it's very intense and difficult to treat. So one particular fellow was not responding well to our treatment program, so I asked him if he'd like to try something different, which they're always willing to do. So I had him lie down on the exam table, and what I did was use the palms of my hand to feel the boundary of his magnetic field, if you will. It's a form of treatment called therapeutic touch that I had been trained in. And basically, while he was relaxing, it looked like I was just smoothing out the air around him, so it looked kind of ridiculous, honestly, but I could feel there's a bouncy sensation. If your listeners even can take a second to put their hands in front of them, palms facing each other a couple of feet apart, and bring them slowly closer and further apart. And at some distance, usually about a foot or something like that, you'll feel some kind of pressure or warmth or tingling. That's when the boundaries of your field are touching each other. So I was feeling that with him. But I continued down as I smoothed it out, and I continued down to the area where his leg was missing. I don't really know why I did it, but much to my surprise, I still felt that same pressure sensation even when I was in the empty space. And the other side of the coin there was he opened his eyes and said, "What are you doing, doc?" Because he could feel me touching his phantom. Even though, there were no nerves down there, there was nothing, the normal medical model couldn't explain why he would feel anything or why I would feel anything. And so what I came to believe is that I was sensing the boundaries of what we now call the biofield, the energy field of the life energy that comprises our body. But what was interesting was that if you cut away the limb, you don't eliminate the biofield there. That's sort of what you might expect if the biofield was just sort of a glow that came off your body. This made it sound like the biofield is actually primary and the limb follows suit. And the best analogy for this is something that your niece probably did in science class just the other day, with iron filings and a bar magnet. If you sprinkle iron filings on a piece of paper over a bar magnet, they line up in this really beautiful geometric pattern that everybody's familiar with, the magnetic lines of force. if you sweep away some of the iron filings, the magnetic field is still there. You just can't see it. So I think the analogy is that the cells of our body are like the iron filings in that demo, and they line up and grow and differentiate in accordance with this invisible biofield comprised of acupuncture meridians and the like. So I think that's the comparison.
Wow. That is fascinating. So how I'd like for this potentially to change. It blows my mind. Now I want it to change my mind, like change my life. Like how, what do I use this for?
Well, I think it as your reaction kind of indicates, it does flip everything inside out, because the medical model is that your brain is redeveloping new circuitry to remember old memories, and you know it's all created by the brain. But this says that there's a whole other level apart from the brain, and it's the energy level. And there are many, fortunately, there are many, many ways to work with our energy processes. Some of them are becoming quite popular in our culture. Exercise regimens like yoga and Tai Chi, they're from the East, where energy is sort of taken for granted. It's very unusual, because the West is the only healing tradition that doesn't have an invisible healing energy as part of it. So, and if your listeners who have practiced yoga, the teachers probably talk about prana, which is the invisible energy that they can circulate just by breathing exercises. Just regulating your breath can regulate your energy flow. Those of your listeners who have participated in traditional Chinese medicine know that acupuncture has these meridians that carry the qi energy, that Tai Chi and Qigong and practices like that can also manipulate. So these are practices that people can learn for their own health to connect with their energy flow and keep it moving, because I think the more the energy flows freely, the healthier you'll be. Whenever there are blocks to energy, you'll have symptoms, whether it's pain or inflammation or infection or chronic illness. And I think what we're finding is that the blocks occur primarily, this will be a little bit controversial perhaps, but primarily because of psychological, emotional types of conflicts and blockages and trauma. Trauma is a really big factor in a lot of illness, because it's sort of behind the scenes. We don't realize how it can actually impact our physical bodies. But just comes to mind that one of the classic texts on trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder is called The Body Keeps the Score. And that's really saying that the trauma is stored in the body. And I think it's done through the mediation of this energy.
Wow. This is awesome. You say you mention East and you mention West, and by West, I know you're talking about mainly allopathic medicine, correct?
Yeah, well, it's called Western medicine. It's really European, you know, from the Greeks and Romans to the Enlightenment era to now. We just have a different perspective on things, and we've tended to focus on the outside world, the external world, physical objects and the five physical senses. And although there is a Western mystical tradition, it's much more prominent in the East, where inner life is valued and inner practices are pursued and valued in a way that they aren't so much in the West. But a lot is changing now, and I think, you know, the two sides, if you will, are merging, and there's a very great synergy when that happens. And I think that's what's happening now. I mean, our medical system has a lot of problems right now, everything from economic aspect, access to healthcare, to what we actually provide, where it's always finding a medication to suppress a symptom rather than learn from the symptom, because symptoms are really signs of imbalance. And if we can figure out what's underlying it, and find a healthier way to rebalance the system rather than knock it around with some of these very, very potent and often dangerous medications.
Mm. Wow. Well, we'll get to talk more with our guest on the mystery of life energy. Our guest is Dr. Rick Leskowitz, And his book and can be found where books are sold, but you can go directly to themysteryoflifeenergy.com. We'll be talking more when we come back. We'll also have our Ask Dorothy segment when we come back. And then we'll be joined by our performance guest, Claude Hall, here on the Life Changes Show when we come back right after this.
Want to connect with amazing people who are committed to making a difference? From the Heart Tribe is a platform, community, and movement with the purpose of bringing like-minded humans together to help animals and the environment in order to gain a stronger connection and understanding of the world around us. They're dedicated to effectuating positive change by empowering individuals to organize meaningful and engaging experiences that build compassion for animals and the natural environment. Their founders and members' passion is to inspire others to actively get involved in their homes, their communities, and the world, to raise awareness about the issues we face, and most of all, to be part of the solution. Through their efforts, they have also accomplished some amazing and tangible achievements. Their Pickup for Paradise beach cleanups have collected over 50,000 pieces of foreign debris. And also, thanks to animal rescue and recovery volunteers, over 30% of the volunteers have become vegan or reduced their meat intake. Daily habits make a big difference. Please join any of their upcoming events by going to fthtt.org and signing up for their newsletter. You can also follow on Instagram and Facebook at From the Heart Tribe.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show, broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com. And follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
The mystery of life energy. Maybe, hopefully, not such a mystery anymore, although I'm sure mysteries go deep. We are excited to be learning what we are learning from our guest, who is a consultant psychiatrist, founder of Integrative Medicine Task Force, and the author of The Mystery of Life Energy book, Dr. Eric Leskowitz. So, Rick, we've been talking about personal energy, and you also talk about group energy. I've heard people associate with certain groups, which no problem with that. I think we all do that. And yet I've also heard people saying, well, you don't want to take on the energy of that association. What would that mean? And what is a good way for us to navigate that when we are part of that group and there's no way around it that we know of?
Well, I think people are sensitive to energies, whether they acknowledge it or not. And that's why we're drawn to be with certain people and in certain places and to avoid others. We each have our affinities. You could say we're like tuning forks, and we resonate to certain frequencies and not to others. And that's just our nature. So it's not a good or a bad thing. But when you find people that you're in alignment with, that kind of resonance is really enlivening and a wonderful sensation. So I think that's part of the cohesion of groups. And, you know, there's the different qualities of energy. Some people bond over caring and kindness and affection. Other groups bond over anger and resentment at something external. But that can be a powerful bonding force as well. And I got interested in studying group energies through sort of a backdoor route through sports. I grew up in the Boston area and a big sports fan. And our baseball team, the Boston Red Sox, had never won the World Series and came close, but never won it over 86 years until, it's actually 20 years ago now, till 2004. And it was just, that season was so magical that all of New England kind of got swept up in it, and it was almost a palpable kind of thing. Plus, watching the team, you could really see their chemistry involved. So my cousin was a filmmaker, and we got together and produced a documentary film about the group energies that the Red Sox players could feel when they bonded with their teammates. They could feel the fan energy and how that uplifted them. So it was not only their personal description of it, but we also had a couple of demonstrations in a laboratory to show how you can actually measure and detect it. Like I was the guinea pig, and my heart rhythm was being measured even while I was blindfolded and had earplugs in. So I was in sensory isolation, but a group of trained meditators came into the room and sat a few feet behind me. And within a few seconds of them entering this heart-centered appreciation meditation called heart coherence, my monitor started to rise in the coherence level, as they call it, simply because I was being entrained or in sync with their vibration. I wasn't consciously doing anything different. I really didn't even know what was happening or when they started because I couldn't hear or see them. And yet my nervous system was responding to it. So that's a really interesting question. What was connecting them to me? I think it was magnetic fields, but it's possible to do the next step of the experiment and put some kind of barrier between us that blocks out the magnetism but allows other kinds of, I think, subtle energies to come through, the prana or the chi or what have you. But that study has not yet been done, but I hope that does get done. So we were studying smaller groups, team chemistry, but fascinating to see that the fans as a whole, you know, in Boston there were like 35,000 people at the ballpark, they could generate an energy that the computer could detect. There's a technology developed out of Princeton, a software that it's called random number generators that can be affected when people pay attention in a certain way. It looks a lot like science fiction because what they've shown over 30 or 40 years of research is the mind can affect machines. Even though there's no wires or anything interconnecting them, somehow or other, and you know, this is obviously a lot of question about how it happens, but it's been documented beyond doubt that the mind can affect the computer's output. And so we were measuring during baseball games at times of peak excitement or peak concentration, the computer would record a spike. And that was very exciting to do because I sort of believed it, but to actually have the demonstration work out in real life, in real time, that was exciting. And then there's also an extension of that where these computer monitors are distributed around the world. Literally, there's over 50 labs around the world that have these computer software programs running continuously to detect changes in the worldwide attention focus. And believe it or not, there are some days and some events where, as a whole, the group global coherence, as it's called, the global consciousness can be detected to have deflections. And it's usually times of very strong influence. So 9/11, for example, was one of the biggest measurements that was detected. But not just in the New York City monitors. These were monitors thousands of miles away would also show these same kind of deflections. There's another annual...
If I remember correctly before you move on, Rick, it was also, interestingly enough, detected before it happened.
Yeah, that's actually much harder to explain. It was right. a couple of hours before the actual plane hit. And, yeah. You know, that gets into the whole notion of precognition and internal, you know, global inner consciousness and parapsychological phenomena, which I think it's the only way to explain that this, because it's such a clear spike. And in my book, and you know, I give you references too to for those of listeners who want to research it more. It's been well documented, even if the explanation is a little bit more hard to explain.
So this is
one more quick point. Sorry.
Yeah.
The website for my book, as you mentioned, themysteryoflifeenergy.com, you can link up to 5-minute video clips that show these two different demonstrations, the one of my heart rate in the lab and the one of the fans at Fenway Park. So you can watch their excerpts from the PBS documentary that we produced.
Nice. So what I'm hearing is like the good news and the bad news, because if we are in an energy field, in a in a culture or in a family or in a city or in a work environment where people feel a certain way, we will be affected by that.
If we're not, it depends on how conscious we are.
Oh.
Many people go through life sort of on automatic pilot and get swept up in the vibe or the culture or the predominant emotions of the place they're at. Once we learn to notice these things, we can be conscious about it and say, is this a vibe, if you will, that I want to magnify myself, or do I want to step back from it? Because there are ways of blocking your own response so you don't automatically get sucked in by everything that happens. And ultimately, you learn to set your own frequency, you set your own vibration. So you can actually maintain peace of mind even in a stormy setting. That's sort of a it's an attainable goal. It's challenging, but just because something is happening externally doesn't mean you have to feel a certain way about it.
Nice.
How you respond is up to you, and you can use these techniques to adjust that.
So Rick, you mentioned in the book how allopathic or Western medicine has used the car example can be used to describe it, right? Like the radiator the something goes out. I can't even think of a car part. Carburetor goes out, you replace it, right? But the Western philosophy can be used also. I don't know if you got to this in the book, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in the sense that if the carburetor went out, or like, why did it? And when did that happen? What is going on in the car owner's life, potentially? I mean, am I taking it too far as you're concerned?
No, I think that's important to do, because usually the focus is on just replacing the carburetor. But if you have a good mechanic, he'll say, you know, have you been gunning your engine a lot at the stoplight or something like that, and see what behaviors you're doing that contribute to it, and coach you on how to change your behavior so that your car can thrive. I mean, the difference is a car can't regenerate, and they all have natural decay processes, but human beings can learn new behaviors, circulate their energy more effectively, and prevent a lot of the breakdown that's so common.
You're reminding me of something that I'd forgotten about, but something went out on my car, and I don't remember what it was, but it was, I was supposed to be at a meeting, and on that day, that happened literally when I turned the car to go to this meeting, which I didn't want to go to. So, and I thought, well, there's a cheaper way to do this. Just next time, don't go to the meeting, right? Like, my car doesn't have to not work and need to get repaired. Just no, you don't want to go to the meeting, don't go.
Well, you must have been really attuned to your car, or your car was really attuned to you, that it responded to your unconscious wishes.
But seriously, this is what I think you're getting at. When we say group, well, the car is potentially part of the group, where we live, the house, the refrigerator. I mean, potentially it's all energy.
Yeah, and I think that with the car analogy, many people say that our physical body is like a vehicle. It's called, in some traditions, it's called the physical vehicle, and that we, the part that we identify as us, is inhabiting our body and running our body, much like we step into a car to drive the car, that there's this subtle aspect to our being, you want to call it the soul or the mind or the self, that operates.
Nice.
As you were saying.
Nice. Well, there are so many topics that we can not only touch on, but really delve into. And it's wonderful to be able to do this with you. Unfortunately, we have a minute left and we haven't talked about. So could you tease the part about the energy from planet Earth?
Well, the idea is that all living things have energy systems, and, you know, animals have acupuncture, and in indigenous traditions, the earth is a living being, Gaia. So is there an energy system to Gaia? And it turns out there is, that I've found that this has been known for quite a while, but there are actually acupuncture meridians through the earth. In the British tradition, they're called ley lines, and there are actually maps of England which show a straight line that connects a lot of the sacred sites, like holy wells and chapels and things like that, are on these lines. And it's also where the megalithic stone circles, like Stonehenge, were built, almost as a way to magnify the energy. There's some evidence that the stones are like crystal radios and generate electricity. And then most interestingly is that in the last 20 years or so, the phenomenon of crop circles, these very unusual, complex, beautiful patterns in the wheat fields, happen in these same regions where the earth energy seems to be heightened. So I don't have a clear sense yet of how it all fits together, but that seems to be an embodiment of the earth's energy, that Gaia has her own energy system, and the crop circles are symbols of it, and you know what we're doing to the planet is definitely not helpful, but hopefully we're waking up and we're learning to respect the earth and her energies as well as our own.
I like that. And actually, I asked you before we ended our pre-show conversation, I asked you, so, okay, we have energy, okay, and then there's a group energy, okay, and the planet has an energy, okay. And I said, and so, and you said, we are connected energetically, and that should mean something to us.
Yeah, I think our main dilemma as human beings now is we're caught up in this us versus them mentality. And it's fostered by the media, but we're always in opposition to somebody or something. And we forget that we're all in it together. We all come from the same source. We're all like leaves on the same tree, if you want to think of it that way. And when we remember that, the more we can remember that, the easier it is to step away from the fighting and the adversarial stuff and to find common ground. And I think that's really going to be the key to get us through our current stressful situations.
Nice. Rick, thank you so much. Again, the book is The Mystery of Life Energy, and themysteryoflifeenergy.com is the website where not only you can get the book, but you can see those videos that Rick was talking about, as well as actually lots of other information. The book is also available where books are sold online. Dr. Eric Leskowitz, thank you so much for being with us today and sharing this information with us.
You're very welcome, and thanks again for inviting me to join you.
Such a pleasure. Thank you. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Shannon, and I'm getting more and more emails from scammers. What is the easiest and best way to check and see if these emails are legitimate?
Dear Shannon, scam emails are more and more prevalent than ever before, so thank you for this timely question. It is very important to be careful when you receive an email from an unknown source, and you definitely do not want to click on any links in these kind of emails. The Better Business Bureau has an excellent article showing exactly how to determine whether or not an email is legitimate and how to spot a scam email in a few simple steps. Number one, recognize common tactics such as scare tactics or emails that produce a sense of urgency. 2, take a close look at the sender's email address. If the address is unrecognizable or a string of letters and numbers that don't make sense, it is probably a scam. 3, don't click on any links until you have researched them. 4, do not share any personal information until you have verified if the email is legit. 5, be wary of poorly written emails full of grammatical errors. 6, don't open attachments that you're not completely certain of. 7, make sure your security software is up to date and running. Shannon, you can find more detailed information to assist you in staying alert to scam tactics by visiting bbb.org/scamtips. You can also find great tips at consumer.ftc.gov slash consumer alerts. I trust you will check out these articles and find the best way to protect yourself from scammers.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her an authentic email at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
I think we need to do a whole show on that. Thank you, Dorothy. And we will be right back with our performance segment. Our singer, songwriter, Claude Hall, will be joining us online right after this here on the Life Changes Show.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and the little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening, someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to dorothydonahue.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show, broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We are back. I am so excited that we have a performance guest who is a singer, a songwriter, actually, who is so much more. With a passion for jazz, here is Claude Hall. Welcome, Claude, to the Life Changes Show.
Hi, Filippo. It's so nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So great to have you. You've been invited for so long, but you've been so busy, and I'm so glad that we've been able to connect, and you are fascinating. Actually, you know, I was thinking about you during the interview, because energetically we kind of talked about the frequency of why we do things and what music means to us, right?
Yeah, I was sitting here saying, oh my gosh, we had that. That's what Filippo and I
right
discussed on our call. So crazy. Like, how perfect, you know, that I should.
And you and I talked first, actually, before that conversation with him. So absolutely. We're tuned in.
Yes.
And speaking,
as Eric said.
Well, and speaking of tuned in, you have been tuned in to music, even though your life has seemingly been about so many other things.
Yes. You know, it's kind of what Rick said. You go about your life without really paying attention and disconnected to who you truly are. And then there's that day when you kind of wake up because you get something really horrible happen to you. And in my case, it was a really bad breakup with the guy that was going to be my husband and I was going to make my life with. And that didn't happen. And the world opened up. And I felt like I fell into that crevice. And it's a very, very good friend who is still a friend today that told me, get yourself a gig someplace and you'll forget the guy. And on that first gig, and I was just, you know, I was just taking vocal lessons because I knew I needed to find my voice. Literally, I had had two divorces. And when the second one was, you know, about to happen, I said, you know what? There's only one common denominator. It's me. I need to search within. And the thing that came to me was go take voice lessons, you know, to find your voice. And when I stepped on that stage, when I did that first performance, which happened to be in St. Bart's, where I was living at the time, something very subtle happened, but I could feel it, that all of a sudden everything made sense. All of my pieces came together and I just felt like I was at home. So yeah, I think the music was always there and I just had to catch up to it.
Nice. Interesting way of putting it. Well, speaking of catching up, like I had the pleasure of meeting you at the Gwen Luminary Awards a few months ago. And thanks to Tess Cacciatore and thanks to Linda D'Onofrio, you were there and now you're here. So shout out to both of them and a thank you. And you, like all these people who were in this room, and I looked over to where you were sitting, for some reason I was just attracted to, who is that? And I thought maybe I knew you, I came over, because you attracted my attention. I wanted to know you before I was introduced to you. And to know that as a child, you did not want to call attention to yourself, I'm thinking, I wonder if you always did or did you? Because maybe you were always this magnet.
Maybe I was. But, you know, even up to, even in my first marriage, you know, and I got married the first time I was about 21 years old. I was in Paris and I was so quiet. And I remember my husband's best friend's wife saying, oh my gosh, the day that wall of China comes down, referring to me, like she could see that there was so much inside of me to share, but I never shared it. I just always felt like everybody else had something smarter or better to say. Wow. And I grew up in a very strict household where, you know, I didn't want to be wrong about anything. And so, you know, if you shut up, if you shut yourself up, you'll never be wrong. Correct. So, yeah, so I was the wallflower and I just didn't think that I was that noticeable, you know?
Well, now not only are you talking, you are, well, actually, I was going to say you're walking, and ironically, you did walk. You walked as a model on stage. So now you're talking, walking, singing. Okay, so let's talk about the modeling days for a second. That's not somebody who doesn't want to be looked at, or was that your way of starting to come out of your shell?
No, you know, growing up, I wanted to be a model. But I was so shy and my parents were so strict that I never did it. And then my first husband was a photographer, which I thought was the perfect thing for me to be a model. But he didn't want me being a model and I did as I was told. So I never really, did that. I'm just starting to explore the commercial acting world and booked a couple of commercials. So yeah, I never, but I took dance lessons, and I think that's the thing. Since I was a young kid, my grandfather, he paid for my sister and I to, and my brother, to have dance lessons, and that's how we kept busy. And you know, there are the recitals at the end of the year, so the stage is something that I was comfortable with.
Wow.
I think because of that.
Wow. I feel like we have only started, we as in the world, has only started to get to hear what Claude Hall has to offer. And interestingly, one of the first songs you put out is called Punch Drunk, and you say it's based on a true story. So before we hear the song, what part of the story can we hear from you?
It's, it's a, I got back from a date, and I think it was, I was on Bumble or one of those sites, and I got home from the date and I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, like this is not gonna work. And then I heard a voice in my head say, yeah, Claude, but how many times have you met couples that seem to be complete opposites? And they work. And they work beautifully, and they've been together for so long. And so that experience, then I started to hear the lyrics come through of all of these different opposites attracting. And as I was telling you, like the intro to the song, I wanted it to feel awkward and feel like, oh, where, what is this song? And then get into, the story of the song.
Wow. Okay. Well, we're going to get into the whole story of the song here, with the awkward, not so awkward, beautiful, but very different, introduction. Here is the pre-recorded version of Claude Hall's song that's been released, Punch Drunk, here on the Life Changer Show Online Edition.
Thank you. go slow. I double time, I'm on the go. You're far behind. I scat with glee. You're watching time. You toe the line. I'm fancy free. And we're dancing like monks, romancing like Miles, cruising in style. Love has got me punch drunk. They say birds of a feather all flock together through all kinds of weather. There is one that's the fun I seem to find. Agree with my kind. They're boring me blind. When where is one that's no fun? You say go slow, a double time. You're drinking tea, I'm sipping wine. We're fancy free, just you and me.
Nice, Claude Hall. I'm going to spell that Claude is C-L-A-U-D-E Hall, H-A-L-L, just like it sounds. Jazz, claudehalljazz.com is where you could find Claude and sign up for learning about where she's going to be next, where you can see her in person. You can get her music there as well. It's music. Her music is available where music is available. Find her also on social media, Claude Hall Jazz. You can find her on the Life Changes Show, and we have a video and some reviews. Claude, is this the song that Jameson Trotter is performing on?
Yes, that's Jameson on piano.
Then I thought, okay, so I want to give a shout out to Jameson because he's great.
Oh my God. writing that song when I went to him, because the songs come, I say they come through me. So they come through me with the melody and the lyrics. And I come at weird times. And so there'll be some awkward a cappella version of it on my recorded on my phone so that I can remember the melody. And then I'll go to Jameson and say, okay, Jameson, this is the song. This is how I want it to feel. And for this particular song, like, he got it on the first go.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. You know, Claude, I would love to hear this song. There's a certain je ne sais quoi about it that I think in French would be. Oh. Am I on it? Are you on it?
I'll have to sit down and work on those lyrics.
I just feel like there's a that you would.
Yeah, I do slip a French word in there. The word ennui.
Yeah.
Boring, because I thought, oh, you know, that works better than the English word.
But yeah, the attitude, I could just see it. I can't wait to see you perform live, and I know that you do many shows. And speaking of shows, you tell stories in your shows, I've heard, and I've also heard from you. And one that I know, because I've heard you sing these songs, actually, at the Gwen Luminary Awards, Songs of Nina Simone. Tell us why Nina Simone and the stories.
You know, Nina, I don't know why, but from the very beginning, she's always, her music has always pulled me towards it. Hmm. And I've done a lot of research on her. I read her autobiography. There's a biopic about her that most people don't know about that is available on Vimeo, done by a Frenchman, that is so compassionate. While it shows her difficult side, it also shows a lot of compassion for her journey. And I have often heard people speak about her and put a lot of focus on her shortcomings. And the Gardenia Lounge, which is one of the longest running cabaret venues in the country, the owner wanted me to do a show, and I gave him a choice between two artists and was very surprised to see that he chose Nina Simone. And so what I did is I tell stories instead of going through her life as if it's a timeline. I picked songs that related to certain stories about her life. You know, for example, when she was in New York on her own before she was well known, and when she was in Atlantic City, there's, you know, a lady of the night, we'll call her.
Oh, that, really? Yeah.
That took her under her wing, you know, and Nina came from a very, very strict and religious family. Her mother was a minister. And this woman actually kind of took care of Nina in a certain way. And so I tell the story about this person. And I also tell stories about, talk about why Nina left the United States after Martin Luther King passed away. When she met Martin Luther King, she said to him, "I am not non-violent." She was so Yeah. She said that to him, like, it's one of the first things she said to him. And he said, "Okay, sister, you know, you do you."
Wow.
And Nina, she wrote this beautiful song when he was assassinated called "Why the King of Love is Dead." Her bass player wrote it, and she wrote the lyrics for it. Wow. And it's just such a beautiful song. And so anyway, I speak about her journey. It's a two-part show. The first part talks about her journey, her professional journey. The second part talks about her journey as a woman and the relationship she had. And I wanted to really share her journey outside of, you know, the more complicated things and what people say was her bipolar, you know, state of being. And while I touch upon that, I think it's important to recognize that a person is a sum of their parts and not just one of their parts.
Oh my goodness. I almost said that. I thought it would be one of my closing comments about you because you were saying, like, when you started to sing, it was like another facet, like a facet on a diamond. Yeah. And I was thinking, I didn't know about the dancing, but I did know about the modeling. And these are all facets. And the more facets you are carving into the diamond of you, the more you're not only shining, but you're helping others do. Because that's also part of the mission in your shows, too, in a sense, yeah. No?
Yes. You know, I noticed how when I would watch an artist doing the thing they love, how it would light me up inside. And my hope is that, you know, through the stories I tell, sometimes it's personal stories about my own journey, or if it's a tribute show, it's about, you know, the artist. My hope is that people can recognize themselves in the journey that I'm sharing and see how a person got over the obstacles. You know, I talk about obstacles as being invitations. You know, a car only moves forward because the road is stationary. So there has to be some kind of tension. So I hope that in my shows, a person might recognize their own story, their own journey, and maybe be inspired to start to let their own inner spirit shine.
Wow. Well, I know we haven't even scratched the surface on obstacles, and that could be subject for another time, or a book or a movie. But the way you're shining now, you must have done some amazing work, and I'm glad that music has been a part of it. And one of the songs that is part of that journey and is a true story is August Afternoon. So can you tell us a little bit about that before we get to hear it?
Yes. It's again another relationship. It's always about love. And I had met somebody very early on when I moved to LA. And at first I wasn't into him. And then about a year later, we started seeing each other, but it was always on and off. And it was always just for fun. And it was one of those things where if it lasts long enough, one of the two are going to fall in love, are going to want it to last longer than the other. And I happened to be the one that happened to.
Oh,
and
no.
And I will let the song tell the rest of the story.
Okay. I've been laughing at awkward times during this part of the interview. I mean, your stories are so rich and some of them so unexpected, again, because you come across as you are elegant and shiny and like, you know, showing something that, you know, we'll have to talk more about this, but something that I think we need to see more of.
Mm-hmm. Okie dokie.
So thank you. And here is Claude Hall's pre-recorded song, August Afternoon, on the Life Changer Show.
It was a cool and sunny Sunday afternoon. We met to chew the fat, discover what would bloom. We joked and laughed about the common things of life, of love, of cheesy flings on a cool and sunny Sunday afternoon. It was a warm and juicy, starry summer's night. My dress was red with yellow flowers painted bright. We laughed and danced all through the night. You pulled me in and held me tight on a warm and juicy, starry summer's night. No room for love to bloom on a hot and sweltery August afternoon. Turns out our tune was a summer sweltery August afternoon.
Claude Hall, thank you so much for sharing that.
Oh, you're so welcome. Oh, my pleasure.
You know, I'm sorry you go through some of these things, but boy, you get songs out of them. Good songs. Exactly. Some... There's got to be another way. But in the meantime, it's working.
Well, you know, it takes a lot of pressure to make a diamond, right?
So. Nicely said. Nicely said. So Claude Hall, jazz.com is where you can learn more about her and her upcoming shows. Claude is C-L-A-U-D-E and then Hall, H-A-L-L, jazz, G-A-Z-Z.com. You can also follow her on social media. We have her links and YouTube channel and all that. Go to lifechangesshow.com and look her up there as well. So Claude, thank you so much. How much fun. We're going to have more fun. I just know it.
Yes. Well, that's what we're here for, right?
To have fun. Nice. Nice. And you know what? I'd love to see a video of that. I'm just saying that song video, you, yeah. Just saying. You see it, right?
I do.
Okay, I'm visualizing it too. So we're group energy here making that happen. So with that, a big pleasure to finally get to connect to you with you in this way and have you on the Life Changes show to share with our audience. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Filippo, for having me and to all the team for everything. Thank you. Thank you.
Our pleasure. Claude Hall, a big thank you to her as our performance guest. And a big thank you once again to Dr. Eric Leskowitz. And that is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Leisure, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio. Now I said my name like that, and I forgot what I say afterwards, reminding you that as your life changes, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.